WNST, Taos of Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a fresh new start and a new chance. It's a new year. It's 2022. We're going to be getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road, presented by the Maryland Lottery. By the way, I got my orange because it's going to be baseball season, especially for this guy here. We're going to be at Nacho Mama's next week, starting off the 2022 campaign. I got a lot of ideas, a lot of conversations to have, including a lot of Ravens non-playoff-related off-season conversations. Don Mohler and I got together in our usual spot, section 513, row one. He's in row two. We've been doing this for well over two decades now. I'm getting to the end of my run. I will take that up with Chad Steele and the Ravens organization at a time when I feel it's appropriate. But Don, nonetheless, I know you got football in the brain to start the year and at least to start the recon here this week, because we did convene together. It's just been so unfortunate, right? I mean, just really unfortunate. I mean, at 8-3 to 8-8 to backup quarterbacks to Josh Johnson, I feel like it's very unfortunate what happened to the Ravens. It's like a horse we never really got to see it run.
Well, you know, Nestor, this is one of those times, and you and I recently, as you said, joined together again in 513. I will be there again to say goodbye to Big Ben, but
amidst a bunch of Steelers fans, no doubt, by the way. I'm a little worried about that.
I'm guessing that the purple towels may outnumber the Ravens jerseys when Big Ben comes. And it's been a great career, so he should get that kind of send-off from Steeler Nation that travels pretty well. But, excuse me, this is one of those times where I'm a terrible prognosticator. You've heard me say that before. That's why I don't bet on sports. Normally, when I think something's going to happen, the other thing happens. My grandchildren were very upset with me back in training camp. This is one of the few times since the Ravens have come to Baltimore when I looked at the composition of the team in training camp, and I thought this was not going to be a good team. And when they started off 7-3, 8-3, I thought, okay, again, I've been wrong, even though they were winning some strange games with 66-yard field goals and other things. I thought, and you know, I mean, I'm on record as to what I think of the organization, from the owner to Dick Cass to Eric DaCosta to Ozzy to my good friend Kevin Byrne, who's still involved but watching from the sunshine of South Carolina. I love this organization. I had a feeling that this was one of those times where they violated that age-old, what I call, and man, I hate to quote Bill Belichick, as good as he is, I'm not a big Belichick fan. But I think Belichick has always lived by the rule, Nestor, always better to cut a guy a year too early than a year too late. And I thought the Ravens had a number of guys on the roster that were near the end of their career. I watched other teams in preseason, and it's dangerous to make any judgments on preseason. I get that, particularly in the midst of COVID. But other teams were flying around to the ball with vicious hits, you know, reminding me of the Ray Lewis, the Suggses, the Bulwares, the Ed Reed years, the Rod Woodson years, flying to the ball. And it just did not look to me as if the Ravens were flying around to the ball, that they were fast, that they were physical, that they, what we like to say and has become known, is were they playing like a Raven? And I didn't get a sense that they were. And I think as the season unfolded, certainly injuries like we've never seen before, and people laugh at me, and that's what drove you off radio, are the people.
I'm still on the radio. I just speak sanely about things. But
Nestor, I had to once again, it's the second week in a row, I just put my phone away after 5 minutes when I got back from the game the other day and just could not look at social media. I believe that this may be John Harbaugh's greatest coaching job ever. And again, it's a minority of people in the fan base who want him fired. They're such a head scratcher. Now, and I'm gonna get your reaction here in a second. I've been long winded. I will say, and you were sitting there, so you can confirm this. This is not hindsight. When we got the ball back with a minute to go in the first half, I turned to my son and son-in-law and I said, we should simply take a knee, go in up 10-0, and feel good about what we did in the first half. It's a two-score game at this point. We didn't do that. Huntley makes the worst throw that he's made since he's been with us. They score 7 points. We lose by 1 point. Now,
that's a level of confidence issue in a backup quarterback, right?
And I think, although even had it been Lamar, I've got to tell you, in a game like that, where you've got so many injuries, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, the fact that we had held them scoreless for 29 minutes, I thought was a true victory. And even had Lamar been at quarterback, given that we have a left tackle who's going to play his last game in the NFL next week. We had a right tackle just back from surgery. We had a substitute center. We got a rookie left guard. And they have Aaron Donald and Von Miller. I didn't like the percentages of trying to get perhaps three more points there versus going in. Now, having said that, John makes a million decisions in a game. I disagreed with that. I happen to think John Harbaugh is one of the premier coaches in the NFL. I think it's one of the premier organizations. And I think we will be back. My last point, Nestor, has to do with being a fan. And I thought about it a lot the other day. I thought about it driving home from the game because I had a son and son-in-law who were dreading going into their houses and facing their sons. They knew it was going to be ugly. They were going to have very, very unhappy children when they arrived home. And, you know, I still feel it very deeply in my gut when the Ravens lose a game like that. And I thought, man, it would be better. Would it be better to not be a fan and just a casual guy that watches the games and like you watch a movie? And we've had some guests.
Well, the level of investment, if we talk about spending money on tickets, right, all these years, right?
Sure.
Like that's really like gathered. We've been there. We've been there together for wins and losses and big plays. I mean, it's different when you're on the couch and you're not there to high five me, right? Literally, right? The high five and the vibe in the stadium and even the lack of vibe in the stadium on Sunday, which I thought it kind of, you know, the fact that a third of the seats were empty, you know, kind of speaks to tickets for $15. Don, if you're, I'll pull a picture up on that then.
You and I disagree on whether it was a third. I'd say that there were, you know, 15 to 20% of the seats. Let's see, it holds 70. There were 50,000 there, you know. So, but it doesn't matter.
I'll give you 42, but that's okay.
Yeah. I noticed the week before, I think I had said to you when we were at the game, you know, watching the red zone, it's, and again, we've talked about it a lot. Dick Cass has talked about it a lot. There are tons of empty seats at NFL games.
I want to pull this up, Don, for the audience that does watch us. This is literally from Dan Gronofsky. This is real fan Dan. He's a Facebook friend. Right. This is his picture, okay? This is literally 1:53 left in the first quarter. We got a lead. Right. You're telling me that's a third? That's not a third? I think I'm being kind of generous. It looks like almost half.
Yeah, I think
no, that's the lower deck and the upper deck.
Well,
these are the lower deck tickets. You know, it. Look, I'm not going to sit here and play this.
Right, maybe,
with Sean Spicer game. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that for the Orioles 25 years ago. I'm not going to do it for the Ravens. Empty seats are empty seats.
Nestor. You thought it was 40. I thought it was 50. It doesn't matter. There were empty seats. They're empty.
Which should be alarming to them.
No, I don't know. I think they are aware of it, and I think the NFL is aware of it. As I said, we've talked a lot.
Well, they're going to have two more seats they can sell of mine next year.
We've talked about it.
That's just a fact. Well, they cost a couple of grand. They do. They cost real money for people.
That's good. You'll sit in the press box, and it'll be fine. But it's a different experience. I can tell you that I, right around Christmas, the Christmas game, when COVID was really spiking, we maybe should have done it yesterday as well, but we, you know, we masked up. We all tested, by the way, before a sign of the times, all three of us tested before we went to the game yesterday morning. We masked up. As you saw, we stayed masked throughout the game. I did not like watching a home game in front of my television. I tried it a couple weeks ago when we aired in the side of caution. And I said,
I don't like it either, by the way, for the record, I don't like, I would way rather be at the game.
The whole atmosphere, the band, the whole thing, the walking to the game, the walking back. I like the whole.
Now you're making the case. If you want to get real about the show, do a real recon here. You're making the case for why I'm so offended that they think I need to sit in the press box and leave my wife in the upper deck. No, you're making the case. No, well, I care about it. It's my show, so I'm going to talk about it. So how about this? Here's the deal. I don't like sitting behind glass in a press box. It's not the same. It's not. I lost my team for 13 years. So to have my team taken away from me, the things that you're talking about loving at the game, I love too. I love all of that. That's why I spend the money. That's why I bought PSLs. That's why I travel on the road. That's why I sat in the seats the last 13, 14 years when their Wi-Fi didn't work well enough for me to do my job, which is tweeting and social media and being a person who covers the team, that you're making the case for why I'm so pissed off.
No,
because I love the band. I love the bowl of the stadium. I love my seats. I love my view. I love my city. I love my football team. I love all of that. So to be told that I can't experience the game that way tells me watching the game at home for zero money starts to sound like what everybody else does, which is the beer's over there, the bathroom's over there. I'll go to Pizza John's, I'll go to Fadley's, I'll go to Costas, I'll get food, I'll go to Wise Markets and shop. I'll bring food home and I'll enjoy it that way. You never went to the road games, dude. I invited you on road games year after year.
You
never thought about getting on a bus to go to Buffalo or to go to the Meadowlands. Like, the road game, you have your own sort of temple that you do every week, right?
I understand. No, the road games did not appeal to me for a variety of reasons. One, it typically didn't work with my work schedule. I didn't like the idea of many times having to fight through airports and get back late at night and jump up and go to work early at 6, 7 o'clock.
But you love traveling. You don't love flying?
I do. No, I don't love flying. I'm not afraid of
flying. It's just crazy. You know, it's amazing to me that you never did want to go. You just never, ever had any interest in going to Chicago for a weekend or literally, you never were that guy.
No. And I love to go to Chicago and go to those places. I just don't like to go to road games per se. Part of it gets back, and I know it's a little bit irrational. Part of it gets back to fandom again, and what being a fan, that's just where I started this, what being a fan means. To me, being a fan, I was thinking about it. I think of the young people that I've counseled over the years who are in a breakup, have been a long relationship, they break up, or unfortunately someone ends up in a divorce, and they say, you know, I wish I hadn't done it. I wish I hadn't fallen in love. I don't think I'll ever do that again. And I always, you know, you always try to talk those folks off a ledge. And you say, wait a minute, you have to understand that think of all the times you had and the joy and the great moments. And in order to feel as low as you feel now, it means you had to have cared. And having cared is what life is all about. We've got to care about something. So that to me is sort of like fandom. When I say to myself, would it be easier to just say, I'm just going to be a casual fan? First of all, you can't just wish it. I've been a fan since I was 3 or 4 years old, right? So you can't just say, well, now I'm going to become a casual fan because it will hurt less. And that was part of the road game things, particularly in the past where teams didn't fare particularly well on the road. Now that's sort of evened out for reasons that people aren't quite sure of over the past few years where road teams are more successful. But I didn't like the idea particularly of schlepping home, whether it was on a bus or a plane, in the agony of defeat, as Jim McKay would say. So, and I love to travel. As you said, I love going to those.
It's teams. So weird because you like going to play golf in places and stuff. And you and your kid go to every game together. Right. It would be very easy for you to take wives or not take wives, take grandkids or not, whatever it would be, a Miami trip to go see the ride. I don't know, but have you ever seen them play on the road? Seriously, I don't.
I saw them play in Jacksonville one time because my sister lives in Jacksonville.
That's the only road game you've ever seen. And I would venture to say in the 26 years that we've sat together at the games, I don't really remember, even when you were CE or whatever, I don't remember you not being in the seats behind me. Same way you don't remember me ever not being in the seats in front of you, right?
The recent game that we skipped because of COVID, I think is the only one. We were there during the snowstorm when the stadium was – there were 30,000 people there, and we sat – through the snowstorm. So no, you're right. I love being there. I think I've said to you before, one of the things that I was always extremely appreciative that both County Executive Smith and County Executive Kamenetz never made me do was they never made me, and they're good friends. So I like being with them. They never made me go with them to Ravens games because I would say to them, guys, there are other people who would like that experience. I value that family experience, sitting with my friends, my son, my son-in-law, my uncle, my nephew, occasionally my grandchildren. That's a family couple of hours for me.
Guess who else values it? Me.
Yeah.
Me.
No, I get it.
I value it. And if I were to take that away from you, you probably wouldn't
like
it.
I'm not going to debate that on the air because.
Yeah, well, I'm happy. No. Just because it happens privately doesn't mean I'm not going to debate it publicly. Because I'm going to have to debate it publicly when I'm not in the seats anymore.
It doesn't have to be that way.
Oh, well, yeah. Well,
no, it doesn't.
In this particular case.
Easily solvable.
I love going to the games.
People don't care about that issue. So we try to talk about.
Well, the issues they care about are.
They don't care where you or I sit. They could care less where you were.
They care. They do care about the off season of the football team and the direction the team's going in. And this is a week where if Lamar's healthy, do you play him? Do you not play him? I don't.
Well, my son raised a great question this morning on social media. He said, by his calculation, if you lose next week, you get the 15th pick in the draft. If you win, you get the 18th. DaCosta, and I think this speaks to where Eric thought maybe this team was heading, Nestor, right? He stockpiled at this moment 10 draft picks. Now, I'm not sure if they're still scheduled to get a couple compensatory after the season or not. He may end up with 11 or 12 draft picks. And Jeff's question was, would you rather, since you're not going to get in, I mean, Jacksonville's not going to beat the Colts. Since you're not going to get in the playoffs anyway, do you want to win or want to lose? That's your question about Lamar.
No, I don't want to lose. I just don't want to run Lamar around Gimpy.
I'm not trying to lose.
I'm not playing for a draft pick. Nobody out there be playing for a draft pick.
That guy we saw in the video posted by, I guess it was Jameson Hemsley last week, that guy isn't going to be ready to play 100% next week. I mean, when I saw he couldn't even run a straight line, he looked gimpier than me, and I'm a 70-year-old guy who's gimpy, for crying out loud. So, he did not look good. Listen, I think the bigger question, Nestor, and you mentioned it, is the offseason. What a big one. for Eric, because I think there are so many holes in this team. As a matter of fact, I was going through the roster thinking about this morning in our chat. I would tell you that there is only, and this is weird for the Ravens organization, right? I think there's only one position where we're set, and that's wide receiver. Now, when in the history of the Baltimore Ravens have we ever said going into the offseason, we're set at wide receiver? Other than that, I don't think we're set anywhere. I think, and particularly on the defensive side of the ball, I am absolutely, and I don't know how you feel about this, Nestor. I don't think, we were talking about this in the car, I don't think you can win in the NFL unless you have at least one, and I probably would lean to two stars on defense. And we have none. You know, in the Lewis years, it was ridiculous. We had four or five, sometimes six stars, right? I mean, we had studs, and we had McCreary, Suggs, Lewis, Reed, Bulwer, go down the list, you know, even Eric Weddle, go down me, Rod Woodson, go down the list. When we had studs, we don't have any stars. And that's no knock at
– Well, we got guys that were stars. Justin Houston was a star. Calais Campbell was a star. Williams was a star. Right.
Correct. No. No doubt. That's where I think – that's what I'm saying. And I think that's the hardest thing, and it will be interesting to watch Eric, how he reacts to all of that. The other thing, and I am in the minority in my family on this one, and I hope, boy, do I want to be wrong on this. My entire family, as I said, I'm a voice of one on this one. I was not happy with the Oway pick from Jump Street. And I'm going to tell you why. And it has nothing to do with the young man's character, appears to be incredible, has nothing to do with his amazing athletic ability. Remember, Kyle Bulwer could throw a football through the uprights from his knee from the 50-yard line. I mean, that's good. So we fell in love. You know, Kyle Bulwer could kneel down, throw the ball through the uprights. Wow! He's our QB of the future. So Owe can run the 40. He's got this incredible motor. Here's what I looked at. He had no sacks at Ohio State. Now, I'm sorry.
Penn State.
I'm sorry. Big Ten. Right. Big Ten. Penn State. Wrong school. At Penn State. If you aren't getting sacks in the Big Ten, something tells me it's a reach to get sacks in the NFL. And it's not unlike the Larry Bird story and your buddy Shaughnessy, who's written a book about Bird right now, right? He couldn't play in it, but nobody in the SEC where he wanted to play wanted him. White guy, can't jump, slow. I don't care about all those points. I don't care about all those records. I don't care about Mr. Indiana. He's slow. He can't jump. He can't play down here. Yeah, well, how did that work out? I have a deep belief that what matters – is what you do between the lines. Not the eye test, not what it looks like, but what you do. So again, Acosta, you know, he knows 9,000 times what I know and those guys about football. But I hope we move to start drafting guys who have done it. The other thing, Nestor, and you've watched it, I think, and I'm hearing rumblings, I think it's time, knowing Bisciotti, don't know him personally well other than to say hi to him, and he's always been very cordial when I've been in his presence, but knowing his history at work, hard for me to imagine that he's not already commissioned some kind of study and analysis to look at the injury that have beset the Ravens versus all 32 teams to see if we indeed have more injuries than other teams, because it certainly seems, and this year may be an outlier, that particularly with knees and ankles that we've had an unusual amount of those. And it would seem to me that somebody's going to have to take a look at the strength and conditioning programs and the people in charge of that. So I think it's a full off season and we've just scratched the surface, but we got so much. We didn't look back at 2021 forward to 2022. I guess we'll do that the next time we,
well, I do want to talk about 2022 in regard to this, because the insurrection's a year. I'm not talking a lot about it this week on the radio. I'm kind of appalled as an American that nothing's been done about this. You know what I mean? Putting, they attacked the country. There was clearly a design and a plan and a lot of money that went into doing to attacking our country. And it's the 1 year, quote unquote, anniversary. Yep. And the people who did this are trying to take a victory lap still. I'm appalled. I really am. Like I worry for our future when we're going to allow what happened a year ago to stand. Because if that would have been Muslim people, people of a different color, people from a different place, if our capital was attacked by anyone, there would have been hell to pay, except for them, because there's some perception that these are Americans in their minds.
Wait, what a segue and teeing it up really for next week. I think what you just said is powerful. Had those attackers been African American, there would have been hundreds of African American dead on the streets of Washington, D.C. The problem is, Nestor and Linda and I were just talking about this morning. I don't think anything is going to happen. And even if it were,
the crime of the century.
Even if the findings were as explicit as we think, it does not matter as long as 70% of the Republican voters have been duped to believing that Donald Trump won the election. Donald Trump won. He won the information war. He's exhausted the rest of us. Even someone like me who tries to read and watch as much as I can have cut back because I find it exhausting. Our good friend who's been on the show, Laszlo Boyd, one of the brightest, you know, thoughtful people I know, has just written a piece suggesting that beyond hyperbole, maybe it really is time to simply divide into two nations and stop this constant gridlock and constant battle and create two separate nations, one of the blue
states. Well, it's two different ways of life that we want at this point. It's very, very obvious to me and the people around me that believing in bullshit because Donald Trump said it has become a way of life. I mean, it's really Orwellian. It's disturbing. It's also disturbing what a painfully less than mediocre human being he is. You know what I'm saying? Well, like clown is the guy that they're following. It's amazing to me. It really is.
This is your guy. It's one of the great mysteries of the 21st century that an absolute carny with not one redeeming quality in his nature has been able to dupe 70 million people. And again, I've written about it. We've talked about it. We'll talk more about it next week.
Things that we thought were impossible 3 years ago when we began this program, for sure. Like anything else, even the Nixon people came around that he was a criminal. You know what I mean? And the stuff that's happened right before our very eyes that we've been told to not believe is Orwellian. I mean, it should frighten people that the people who did this to DC policemen to threaten democracy, that a year later they're still sitting in seats when they were texting that are very clear are traitors. I mean, there's nothing else to say. If you want to take down the the United States of America and take down an election, you're a fascist. Is what you are.
Far more concerning. Yes, all of that is disgusting, concerning. You choose whatever adjective you'd like to put on it. All of that, as disturbing as it is not nearly as disturbing as the quiet thing that's taking place right before our very eyes. And that is that across the country, in 17, it gets more every day, 17, 18, 19 states, procedures are being put into place legally to overturn future elections. So when people say the future, I'll say to some of my Republican friends, you know, the future of democracy truly is at risk. And they'll roll their eyes and they go, you guys, you exaggerate. But right before our eyes, procedures are being put in place to allow state legislatures to overturn rules.
Dude, they have the president of the United States on the phone mafying the Georgia election
Correct.
Official.
Asking like, for 11,780 votes. Correct.
Mafia style. And he's having press conferences on a beach in Florida. It's insane.
No. This is – Nestor, I know you don't have much time particularly now. Hey, we got to close that, man, because you're we got to close that segment by talking about the clock is ticking and you're packing up and the boxes are – you can't even get to your windows because you're packing. But and you don't have much time to watch anything. But there's a movie that Max Weiss has – our buddy Max has tweeted about on Netflix right now called Don't Look Up. And it's not a great movie. It's not an Academy Award winning film. Got an incredible cast, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Did you watch the movie?
Meryl Streep. Yeah, I did. Jonah. And I watched it. Max wrote something snarky about it. So I texted her and I said, well, you talked me out of it. She said, no, watch it. Because even though it's not a great film, it is a pretty interesting social commentary. And in it,
it's a wag the dog thing, right? Literally, right?
It's a satire. Yeah, it's Trump administration. Meryl Streep plays Donald Trump. But one of the scariest and most poignant moments in the film, spoiler alert, those of you who haven't seen it, turn us off, go see it, and then come back and play this again. But at the end of the film, we're probably a minute out from the world blowing up as this meteor hits it. That's the whole theme of the thing. This meteor is about to hit the world, but the Trumpites and the MAGAites, that doesn't fit their narrative. So they're not going for that. And they simply tell people to don't look up and everything's going to be okay. That's just don't look up. Listen to me. That's Meryl Streep. And with a minute to go, they flip to the Fox News component of Don't Look Up. I forget what they call it in the movie. And of course, they're going, and today, in even better news, I mean, they are ignoring, the world is blowing up in 1 minute. And on the Fox News.
But at least we can say Merry Christmas.
But at least we can. Yeah, exactly right. There's no war on Christmas. So we are in an ugly time. One last thing, Nestor, before we get out of here. I did see, and this I'll get some more info on this for next week. I'll do some research for us. I saw a guy interviewed who analyzed as much as he could everyone who attended, through a lot of research, the January 6th insurrection. And what he found was the uniting bond was surprising and the connection was surprising. Wasn't necessarily coming from counties that Trump won, wasn't from red counties or not from blue counties. The uniting piece was the overwhelming number of people who attended January 6th.
Had people of color move into their neighborhoods.
That's it. You saw it. That's exactly right. Saw their neighborhoods changing. And I thought, wow, let's all just go to 10,000 feet and think about what that means and wish for a better 2022. So let me inquiring minds are following you. Are you ready? Are you packed up? Are you and Jen? Is the car packed? Are the Beverly Hillbillies heading out? You know, are you ready to go?
You know, if people don't care where I sit, they're not going to care where I move to. So,
I don't care where you move, but they want to know that you move safely and that you're out and you're all.
I'll let you know when I get there. I'll be fine. I mean, I made it from Dundalk to White Marsh, back to Dundalk, back to downtown, you know, with various stops in Towson and other places. But,
there you go.
You know, I would say this on living somewhere because I know rates are going up and. Woo. I don't have anything in my mind that there's a place I want to be for the next 18 years, the way I was here for 18 years. Because when I moved here, I really thought I might never leave. And we might never have left had the city gotten better instead of worse, had COVID happened, had real estate been what we thought it would be downtown. The end of leaving downtown was something I never really considered until it was time to go. To the new beginning, that's the part that's exciting for me. You know, it's 2022.
Sure. No, it's different.
It's a fresh start, and that's where I move my energy.
You have a lot of people who follow you and have shared your journey and good times and bads and illness and health and all that. And you mentioned, you know, prices continuing to go up and the market's still strong. So we give a shout out to one of our best sponsors, Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realty. They got Nestor's condo.
He's one of our best because he got my condo sold. So I like Jeff a lot.
So give Jeff Moeller and Gary Realty a call. They'll take care of you.
It had nothing to do with the beer in Ocean City, though. I'm just letting you know, as his father. He didn't sell my house because of that.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about in 2022. We've got some interesting Baltimore positives down the way, and it's a big year, man. You know, you got all kinds of sponsors, and the station is growing, the podcast is growing, and you're moving on up.
Well, the Crab Cake Tour's moving along. It's all presented by the Maryland Lottery. We're going to let ourselves play. We're going to be at Nacho Mama's next week to start the party. And then after that, I'm putting a full slate together into the winter, into the spring. I'm not going anywhere. We're here to stay. He is Don Moeller, former Baltimore County executive and former guidance counselor to me at Dundalk High School, 1982-83. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. That was the recon, and this is Baltimore Positive.